Hey everyone, ready for a deep dive into something pretty amazing? We're talking tiny tech, but with a huge impact on your health, micro and nanotechnologies in medicine.
Yeah, it's a field that really captures the imagination, doesn't it? We're talking about working with building blocks so small they're practically invisible. A billionth of a meter, that's a nanometer. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's hard to even fathom something that small. But what's really cool is that these minuscule technologies are making a huge difference in how we diagnose, treat, and even prevent diseases. You sent over some fascinating research about it, so I'm excited to dig in.
Absolutely, and this deep dive is going to be like taking that research and putting it under a microscope. We'll really zoom in on the most interesting facts and breakthroughs.
Perfect. Okay, so before we get totally lost in the nano world, can you just give us a quick explanation of what we actually mean by micro and nanotechnologies in the context of medicine?
Sure. So basically, it all comes down to engineering at the absolute tiniest levels. We're talking about manipulating materials at the scale of micrometers, that's 1/1,000,000th of a meter, and of course, those even tinier nanometers. And what's really wild is that at these scales, materials often take on these unique properties we can actually use in medicine.
So it's not just about shrinking things down, it's about unlocking these new possibilities because things behave so differently at such a small scale, right?
Exactly. Think of it like this. You know how a sugar cube dissolves much slower than granulated sugar, even though it's the same stuff. It's all about surface area. Now, imagine a carbon sphere. At the nanometer scale, almost 2/3 of its atoms are on the surface. It makes it incredibly reactive compared to a larger sphere.
Wow, that's a great way to visualize it. So when we talk about these micro or nanoscale tools in medicine, what are we actually talking about? What are some examples?
Well, there are a lot of different ways to think about it, but basically we can use both inorganic materials like iron oxide nanoparticles they use in MRI imaging, as well as organic materials, things like polymers, lipids, even cells themselves.
Wait, hold on. Cells themselves. As in, we're using whole cells as therapies now.
We are, but we'll get to that. First, I think it's helpful to start with a bit of a historical perspective. It might surprise you to learn that the concept of biomedical nanotechnology actually predates the word nanotechnology itself.
Really? That's fascinating. How far back are we talking here?
Way back, 1798. Edward Jenner and those pioneering vaccines using the cowpox virus to protect against smallpox.
Oh, yeah.
That was actually a groundbreaking use of what we now understand as nanotechnology.
Wow, I never thought about it like that.
Yeah.
Harnessing something microscopic for a medical benefit, that's incredible. So from those early vaccines, how has the field evolved?
It's just exploded in so many different directions. Let's start with those inorganic nanomaterials. Take iron oxide nanoparticles, for instance. They've been used in medicine for decades. Those super detailed images you see from an MRI, often they rely on iron oxide nanoparticles.
So we're already benefiting from this technology without even realizing it. That's pretty cool. What about the organic side of things? You mentioned polymers earlier.
Yeah, polymers are fascinating. They're like the Swiss Army knives of the microscopic world, so versatile. We can engineer them to create these controlled release drug delivery systems or form tiny microneedles for painless injections. All sorts of things.
Okay, painless injections. You've got my attention.
Yeah.
Tell me more about how those work.
Okay, so picture this. Tiny, tiny needles, often made from polymers, so small that they actually bypass the nerves in your skin. That means you can get the medication you need, but without the ouch of a traditional injection. And you know what? The very first clinical trial focusing on the painlessness of microneedles was actually way back in 2001.
Sign me up. Okay, so polymers are out there being total overachievers. What about lipids? I know they're super important for our cells, but how do they factor into all of this?
Lipids are key for creating some of the most impactful drug delivery systems we have. Take liposomes, for example. They're basically tiny spheres made of lipid bilayers that mimic the structure of our very own cells.
So sneaky, using the body's own building blocks against it.
Exactly. And this allows them to carry drugs within their core, which protects those drugs from breaking down too quickly and delivers them to specific spots in the body. This targeted approach is really changing the game, especially for treating cancers.
And the article mentioned Doxil specifically. What's so special about that one?
So Doxil is actually the chemotherapy drug doxorubicin, but it's encapsulated in a pegylated liposome.
Pegylated. That's a word we've been seeing a lot in this field.
It's everywhere. Pegylation, which is basically attaching polyethylene glycol or PEG, is kind of like giving a drug a disguise to slip past our immune system.
So it's like an invisibility cloak for medication.
You could say that.
Yeah.
And this cloak allows therapies to hang out in the bloodstream longer and reach their target more effectively.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So back to Doxil. How has that invisibility cloak actually impacted how well it works?
Well, before Doxil, doxorubicin was known for some pretty nasty side effects, particularly heart toxicity. But by packaging it up in that protective pegylated liposome, you reduce those side effects while actually improving treatment outcomes.
So it's a win-win. Fewer side effects, better results. That's incredible.
It is. And you know what's even more exciting? Its success really paved the way for a whole wave of pegylated liposomal drug delivery systems. It just goes to show how one breakthrough in this field can have a ripple effect and lead to all sorts of new treatments.
Speaking of breakthroughs, we have to talk about lipid nanoparticles, or LNPs. The article highlighted their use in the COVID-19 vaccines, right?
Oh, absolutely. Those vaccines are really a landmark achievement for LNP technology. Remember the mRNA vaccines from Pfizer and Moderna?
Of course.
They relied heavily on, you guessed it, pegylated lipid nanoparticles to deliver those mRNA instructions for building the spike protein.
It's like these tiny delivery trucks carrying such precious cargo.
Ah.
But why LNPs? What makes them so special for delivering mRNA?
Well, mRNA is incredibly fragile. It can be degraded super easily in the body, and it can't really get into cells on its own very well. LNPs help protect the mRNA from that degradation while also helping it sneak into cells to actually do its job.
Okay, so the mRNA is protected, gets into the cells, then what? How does it trigger our immune response?
It's pretty elegant, actually. Once inside the cell, it reads the mRNA instructions and starts churning out that spike protein. Your immune system spots this and thinks, "Hold on, we've got an intruder," and starts producing antibodies.
So it's like a training exercise for our immune system, getting it ready for the real deal.
Yes. Exactly. And that way, if you do encounter the actual virus, your immune system is prepped and ready to fight back.
That's amazing. It's mind-blowing to think something so incredibly small can have such a massive impact. And we've already covered so much ground, from those early vaccines to cutting-edge LNP technology. And it feels like we're just scratching the surface of what micro and nanotechnologies can do in medicine.
Oh, we've only just begun. There's so much more to uncover.
And there's more to come. We'll be right back to explore even more of this incredible world of micro and nanotechnologies in medicine. Stay with us. Welcome back to our deep dive into micro and nanotechnologies in medicine. I feel like we're just getting started, and it's already blowing my mind.
Right. And believe it or not, there's so much more. We've only begun to scratch the surface of what these technologies can do. Remember those inorganic nanomaterials we were talking about?
You mean like the iron oxide used in MRI imaging?
Yes. And they're not just for enhancing images either. They're also being used for something called targeted imaging.
Targeted imaging. Okay, now that sounds interesting. What is that?
So imagine this. You attach these tiny targeting molecules to the nanoparticles, like little homing beacons that guide them to specific cells or tissues in the body.
Wow. So if you were looking for signs of a tumor, you could design nanoparticles to seek out and bind to those cancer cells, lighting them up on an MRI.
Exactly. It's like shining a spotlight right on the problem area, which leads to more accurate diagnoses and hopefully earlier detection, which is so important when it comes to treating diseases like cancer.
Absolutely. Catching it early can make all the difference. This is remarkable. Are there other imaging techniques that benefit from nanotechnology?
Definitely. Quantum dots, for example, are showing a lot of promise. They're these semiconductor nanocrystals that actually emit light in specific colors when you excite them, and they're being used for a whole range of applications. I'm talking everything from tracking individual molecules within cells to even guiding surgeons during tumor removal.
It's mind-blowing to think about using these advanced materials on such a tiny scale.
It really is incredible.
Yeah.
And this field just keeps pushing the boundaries of what's possible. Remember how we were talking about using organic materials like cells as therapies?
Yeah, that definitely caught my attention earlier. It's kind of hard to wrap my head around using actual whole cells as therapies.
Yeah, it's a whole other level, isn't it? It's called cell-based therapy, and
Yeah.
it's revolutionizing how we think about treatment, especially for cancers. And one of the most exciting advancements we've seen in recent years is CAR-RT, cell therapy.
CAR-RT. Okay, I've heard that term before, but to be honest, I need a little refresher on exactly how that works.
Sure. So essentially what we're doing is taking a patient's own immune cells, specifically T cells, and basically supercharging them in the lab to recognize and attack cancer cells way more effectively.
So you're giving our immune system a boost to fight cancer more aggressively.
That's a great way to put it. We're giving those T-cells the tools they need to become better cancer fighters.
That's incredible. But how do you even begin to train a T-cell to recognize and target those cancer cells specifically?
Right, so it all comes down to something called chimeric antigen receptors, or CARs. We basically equip those T-cells with these engineered receptors that are designed to bind to a very specific protein found on the surface of cancer cells. It's kind of like attaching a homing device to the T-cell that guides it directly to the tumor.
Oh, wow. So these modified T-cells are then injected back into the patient, where they can then seek out and destroy those cancer cells with incredible precision.
That's the idea. And because we're using the patient's own cells, there's a much lower risk of rejection, which is a major advantage over traditional organ transplants.
That's amazing. QR T-cell therapy sounds like it has the potential to completely change how we treat cancer.
Yeah.
Are there other types of cell-based therapies that are being researched right now?
Oh, absolutely. Scientists are also looking into using stem cells, which have this remarkable ability to develop into different types of cells in the body. Stem cell therapies hold a lot of promise for a wide range of diseases, everything from repairing damaged heart tissue after a heart attack to treating neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's.
Wow, it seems like the possibilities really are limitless. If we can engineer cells to fight disease, what can't we do? It makes you wonder, what's on the horizon for micro and nanotechnology in medicine? What other frontiers are out there?
There are always new frontiers being explored. But even with all of these incredible advancements, it's important to remember that we still face challenges in this field.
What kind of challenges? Because right now it seems like we're on the verge of unlocking some serious medical miracles.
We are, but like any new technology, there are going to be hurdles. One of the biggest is actually getting those micro and nanotechnologies where they need to go in the body.
Oh, I see. So we can engineer these amazing therapies, but it's all for nothing if they can't actually reach their target. What are some of the obstacles that get in the way?
Well, our bodies are incredibly complex, and getting from, say, a syringe to a specific cell deep within a tumor is a pretty difficult journey. Our immune system, for example, is essential for protection, of course, but it can sometimes mistake those therapeutic nanoparticles for foreign invaders and just clear them right out of the body before they have a chance to do their job.
Oh, man, that's so frustrating. It's like our bodies were trying to protect us from the very thing that could help us. Are there ways to overcome that obstacle?
Scientists are working on that. They're trying to find ways to disguise these nanoparticles, make them look less threatening to the immune system. Remember pegylation? That invisibility cloak we were talking about. That's one approach that's showing promise.
Right. So making those tiny ninjas invisible to our immune system's defenses. Love it.
Exactly. But even then, it's not always that simple. Beyond just immune clearance, there's also the challenge of manufacturing these therapies on a large scale.
Right. We touched on that earlier. A lot of these micro and nanotechnologies are pretty expensive to produce right now, which could make it difficult to get them to everyone who needs them.
Yeah, it's a real hurdle. But I'm hopeful. There's been a lot of progress made in this area, especially with the development of those mRNA COVID-19 vaccines.
Oh, absolutely. Those vaccines are a perfect example of just how quickly this field can move when there's a global need.
Definitely. And all of that knowledge and experience gained from scaling up production for those vaccines, that's going to have a huge impact on other areas of micro-nanotech in medicine as well.
That's encouraging. So despite the challenges, it really does sound like the future of this field is bright.
It really is. We've only just begun to explore what's possible.
And we're back, ready to dive into even more of the amazing world of micro and nanotech in medicine. We've seen some incredible things already, but you mentioned earlier that it's not always smooth sailing. What are some of those other speed bumps researchers are trying to get over in this field?
Well, one that's really interesting to talk about is something called the EPR effect.
The EPR effect.
Initially, it seemed incredibly promising, but it's turned out to be a little more complicated in practice.
Okay, I'm intrigued. So for those of us who aren't scientists, what is this EPR effect and why is it such a big deal for this field?
Okay, so EPR stands for Enhanced Permeability and Retention. And basically, scientists realized a while back that the blood vessels in tumors tend to be kind of leaky compared to the blood vessels in healthy tissue.
So like a sieve, the nanoparticles are small enough to slip through those gaps in the tumor's blood vessels, but bigger molecules can't get through.
That's the idea. And because tumors often have poor lymphatic drainage too, researchers thought, these nanoparticles will get trapped in there and deliver a higher concentration of drugs directly where we need them, right to the tumor.
Makes sense to me. Sounds like a pretty elegant solution, actually. So where's the hiccup?
It turns out the EPR effect isn't quite as consistent or predictable as everyone originally hoped. The number of nanoparticles that actually make it into the tumor can be all over the place, and often it's a lot lower than expected.
So our little ninjas are getting lost on their way to the target? What's going on there?
Well, a lot of things, actually. It's complicated, but one factor is that not all tumors are created equal when it comes to leakiness. The size of those gaps in the blood vessels can really vary depending on things like the type of tumor and how far along it is. And even within a single tumor, you can have variations in leakiness.
So it's not a one-size-fits-all kind of deal. You can't just assume every tumor is going to behave the same way.
Nope. And to make it even trickier, tumors can actually create a lot of pressure as they grow, which can make it even harder for nanoparticles to penetrate, even if the blood vessels are leaky.
Oh, wow. So even if they find the leaky spots, it's like trying to squeeze through a blocked doorway. Does that mean we're back to square one when it comes to targeted drug delivery?
Not at all. It just means researchers need to be even more clever in how they design and deliver those nanoparticles. For example, they're exploring ways to create nanoparticles that can actually actively target the tumor cells instead of just relying on that passive delivery through the leaky blood vessels.
Oh, so instead of just hoping they find the right address by chance, we're giving them a specific address label.
Exactly. And of course, they're always working on ways to improve those invisibility cloaks, making them even stealthier, less likely to get flagged by the immune system.
Tougher ninjas, better navigation. I love it. But okay, so say you perfect the nanoparticle. There's still the challenge of actually manufacturing these therapies on a large enough scale, right?
Absolutely. It's one thing to create a breakthrough in the lab. Figuring out how to produce it affordably and at a scale that can actually help everyone who needs it, that's a whole other challenge.
Right, and we don't want these incredible advancements to only be available to a select few.
Yeah.
Everyone deserves access to these cutting-edge treatments.
I completely agree. But the good news is we've learned a lot, even just recently, from successful large-scale production efforts. I mean, think about the mRNA COVID-19 vaccines.
That's a great point. Those vaccines were really a game changer. Not just how quickly they were developed, but the sheer number of doses they were able to produce.
Right. And the knowledge gained from that, from figuring out how to scale up production like that, it's going to have a huge impact on other areas of micro and nanotech in medicine, too.
That's amazing to hear. Well, it seems like this is a field that's full of incredible potential, but also still faces some pretty big challenges. What excites you most about the future of micro and nanotechnology in medicine?
You know, for me, it really boils down to the idea of personalized medicine. Imagine being able to design a treatment plan that's tailored to your specific needs, to your unique genetic makeup.
Oh, wow. Not just treating the disease, but treating your disease. That's incredible. How would micro and nanotechnologies even play a role in that?
Well, think about those nanoparticles we were just talking about. What if we could design them to deliver a drug only to the cells in your body that need it most, while avoiding healthy cells? Or engineer them to release a drug only when they sense a specific signal from your body.
Whoa, fewer side effects, better outcomes. It sounds almost like science fiction.
It does, doesn't it? But I really do believe we'll see personalized nanomedicine become a reality. And might be sooner than we think. This field is just moving that fast.
I, for one, am really excited to see what the future holds. And for everyone listening, that's something to think about. If scientists can engineer cells to fight cancer and design nanoparticles that act like tiny smart bombs, what other incredible applications of micro nanotechnology can you imagine in the future of medicine? It really feels like the possibilities are endless. And that's it for our deep dive today. Thanks for joining us for this incredible journey into the world of tiny tech with a huge impact. We'll see you next time, but until then, stay curious.